Danielle, I can't believe that we have over 1 million downloads on our podcast. And I think back to when we started the podcast and you were like, Whitney, we have to do a podcast. And I'm like, I don't think we can add one more thing onto our list of to-dos and creations. And you convinced me because we were going to be able to talk to some of the most interesting, powerful minds on the planet. People who are studying everything from antioxidants, metabolism, to the gut microbiome and spirit and how the mind connects to it all.
Yeah, it's been a really reaffirming experience, hasn't it? And we come home to this place of food as medicine. I know we each kind of have our own stories on how food became medicine. And if you haven't heard our stories, it's the first episode of the Sakara podcast. The food that we create here at Sakara is designed to transform your gut and your microbiome health. And when you do that, you change everything about who you are. You change your mental health, you change your physical health, you change your spiritual health, you change your cellular health. As you like to say, Whitney, what you eat becomes what you are. Like, your body is made up of the things that you eat and drink and think.
And what you've learned by listening to our Sakara podcast is that that diversity of ingredients that you're getting into your body changes the diversity of bacteria in your gut, which is the epicenter of your health. And it supports your total body health, not just today, but into the future. And so I want to invite you, if you haven't tried Sakara before, you deserve to feel good. You deserve to feel nourished in your body. And we are here to help you do that. You can find more details and how to customize your own plan on Sakara.com and enjoy 20% off your first order of our Sakara Signature Nutrition Program with code POD. That's code P-O-D at checkout for 20% off your first order. Order now.
Today, we are so excited to have one of our personal friends and spiritual healer, Michelle Brock, on the podcast. Michelle is a renowned past life regressionist whose profound insights have guided countless individuals on transformative journeys of self-discovery. With a wealth of experience in the realm of metaphysical exploration, Michelle has dedicated her life to helping others uncover the mysteries of their past lives and unlock the wisdom held within. Through her compassionate guidance and intuitive expertise, Michelle empowers her clients to heal unresolved traumas, overcome obstacles, and embrace their true purpose with clarity and confidence. Her new book, Who Do You Think You Are?, is a powerful guide to manifesting the happiness and satisfaction we desire in the present by reconnecting us with our experiences from the past. Please join us in welcoming Michelle Brock. Well, welcome to the Sakara Life Podcast, Michelle. Both Whitney and I are so happy to have you here. Welcome.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm excited to see you.
Well, the first question we like to start off with is, what is your mission here on Earth? What are you here to do, give?
My mission is to allow people to remember who they were in a past life. And, you know, with the idea that I'm meant to kind of teach them or show them the way, right? I've walked this path before. So kind of like reading the map, right? Or knowing someone who's walked the trail. That is my mission, my purpose. I am passionate about it. And I'm excited to do work that serves that purpose every day.
And when you say you've done this before, you mean you've been a past life reader in one of your past lives?
Oh, yeah, not necessarily, not in that way. I'm saying as far as recalling memories from my own past lives and how that changed my life. And that's kind of how I became a life coach. I really had my own direct experience, which allows me to kind of show my clients how to go through that process themselves. I haven't been a past life psychic. I've been a lot of things, but not that. So.
I would love to understand, and I know this is really what your book is about, how do you think understanding your past lives can help currently or help your future life?
Yeah.
Why is that your mission? Like, what does it add? What does it do to one's life?
So understanding who you were in a past life gives you perspective and context for your life today, right? It helps you kind of see how you got to where you are, why you made the choices that you did about the life you chose. Yes, I do believe we choose our lives. We choose our circumstances. We choose our parents. We choose our bodies, the things that are going to happen to us. And through understanding history, right, and our own personal history by way of our past lives, we can understand more about who we are on a deeper level, a soul level, which transcends any of these identities that we have that are connected to our bodies and our life right now. And then once you start to understand that any identity that you have that you've formed about yourself that is based on a past life is a false identity, right? That you're a soul, not a body, then you actually can discover that the future is not determined. You can actually make choices and get rid of the past, things that are holding you back. And then the future is wide open to create and become who you want to be, right? That's why I call the book, Who Do You Think You Are? Because it really is a book about identity through the lens of past lives.
And when you think about past lives and reincarnation, is it tied to a certain religious belief, or is it just something that you kind of like intuitively feel?
That is a really great point to kind of bring up, because I think that a lot of people associate belief in reincarnation as with certain Eastern religions. You know, for me, I want people to kind of encourage a spiritual path that doesn't involve religion, that's personal. Some people's spiritual journey involves religion, and if that's what works for you, that's great. But you don't have to necessarily come from a tradition that believes in reincarnation or past lives in order to accept this belief. And actually, there was a poll that I read recently. I think it was a Pew poll that said that 46% of Americans believe in reincarnation. And I thought that was incredible. And of that, something like 80% were under the age of 35, which to me makes a lot of sense. So this is actually something that we openly believe in this culture, but we don't kind of talk about it as openly, I believe, as we should. It's kind of either relegated to Buddhism or Hinduism or more woo-woo practices or new agey stereotypes. And I've been looking to break those stereotypes and let people know that past lives are something that people experience, whether through their dreams or a just knowing all the time, and that you don't necessarily have to have a religious belief connected to past lives in order to be open to the experience.
Danielle and I have both done a past life regression with you. We each had our own session with you, actually a number of years ago. We've known you for a while.
Yeah.
We know what it's like, but I think for a lot of people listening, they've probably never done this before and are wondering, what does this look like? How does it work? Can you tell us a bit about what it looks like when you're working with someone to do a past life regression?
So basically, I guide people to a place kind of within themselves where they can have contact with their own unconscious mind. So it's a very meditative process. It is technically hypnosis, and I've been trying to break up with that term for a while because people think there's like mind control connected to hypnosis, which is not true. And, you know, because I have a teenage son, if I could do mind control, that'd be where I put it. But it doesn't work that way, unfortunately. But basically, people relax and they open themselves to communicate with their unconscious mind, which is also where I believe our higher self or authentic self, right, our soul or spirit resides. So whatever you want to call it. And once you can tap into that space, that's where the memories of your past exist. So a lot of people just relax and I use guided imagery and they're surprised at just how under the surface these memories seem to be. They're like, wow, it's just like I just relaxed and there it was.
And I think the way you do it, Michelle, is a little different, right? I've done a past life regression really, really long time ago, and it was more someone telling me what my past lives were, where when you do it, I was telling you, but kind of under hypnosis. And is it okay if we share like some of the details of my experience of how you did it? So it was really interesting because, yeah, you kind of did this like gentle, it just felt like a meditation, really. And, you know, you kind of create this safe space. And then you say like something like you're going on a journey, like open your eyes, like where are you?
and the first thing you ask is for someone to tell you what shoes they're wearing. You're like, look down. And obviously you guys, like, our eyes are closed. I'm in a meditative state. And she says, what shoes are you wearing? And it's, I guess, related to, like, you can tell so much about someone's kind of like shoes and clothing, like what time period, socioeconomic status, gender, age, etc. And so you walked me through three of my past life regressions. And it is this really wild experience because I was telling you, you kind of question yourself. You're like, am I making this up? But then you're like, well, I've never, ever thought about this before. So like, and I don't necessarily consider myself like a storyteller, a writer that can easily come up with interesting stories. And so you ask me details and it's like, you kind of just have to be in the flow and surrender. You really are guiding it, but you just say what's top of mind. And what was so funny was that I realized I'd had a past life with Whitney.
Yeah, so funny.
And I don't expect you to remember this, Michelle, but I had a past life with Whitney, and Whitney was my husband, and we had two kids, and all like super blonde, like I could see like blondest toehead kids with like bright blue eyes. And it was at the time of like the Oregon Trail and like Manifest Destiny and getting to all the way to the West Coast for gold. And Whitney had convinced us to do this trip. And we got there and there was like no gold.
To be part of the gold rush. No gold.
We got there. There was no gold. And so I was so mad at her because I told her, I was like, this was not a good idea. And so it was like really a lifetime of a lot of suffering. And we suffered our way through that. That lifetime is what it felt like. It didn't feel bad. Like I never had this feeling of like, oh, that was awful. But maybe it's because I'm looking back on it instead of experiencing it.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was really interesting that like I knew it was Whitney, even though she obviously didn't look how she looks now.
Yeah. And she was a man, not a woman,
yeah,
right?
Yeah. But I didn't have that in any of my other past lives necessarily, that like I recognized the soul.
Yeah. No, I mean, that's really interesting. And obviously, it doesn't surprise me at all that you guys are soulmates, right? And your partnership in this life looks a little different than it did in that life. And I don't know as far as like who to trust or like, is that a good idea business-wise or like whatever, if those are things that kind of inform you. But you're right. It is a lot different to experience it yourself rather than someone kind of telling you. And it is kind of normal to kind of wonder like, am I making this up? But yet it's very visceral, right? Like it's emotional even for a lot of people. So I always tell people, I'm like, I could tell you who you were in a past life, but I'd rather show you because then it could become your direct experience. This is going back to what we were talking about the difference between belief or faith or religion and actually direct experience, that if you experience something directly, it can then become your own truth, right? And what is true for you might not be true for another person, right? So I always tell people, have the experience, have an open mind and see what you think. And some people are still like, well, I don't know if I made it up or not, but yet it made so much sense in my life. And there's always a takeaway. There's always some way it's related to your life right now and some kind of lesson with it. But again, what you said, your story about discovering Whitney's your soulmate had so many elements in it that there is a soulmate aspect to this work as well. We do reincarnate with people over and over again and again, reunite after death. This is kind of like a real life romance, right? You're reunited across oceans of time again and found each other for whatever purpose, right? Sometimes it's for learning or for growth or difficult lessons, like a lot of people that are going through difficult relationships, trying to navigate them and understand why. There's often a past life reason. And they'll be like, oh, that's why this person triggers me, or I can't leave this difficult relationship, even though I know I should. So there's always a practical this life application to the past life work that we do. And it's fascinating. It's never what you think it's going to be, but it's always relevant.
It's interesting that you say that, because now that I think about my experience of Whitney in that life, it was very much like, even though it was hard, we were in it together and we still have that. We're never going to like give up on each other, even when times get tough.
I love that. Yeah.
Yeah.
Totally.
In one of mine, I'm trying to remember some of my past life regressions that we talked about. I remember in one of them, I think it was at the time of my death in that life. And I had been in a cart accident. I'll call it a cart because it was being pulled by a horse or a donkey or something like that. And I was like in a ditch, you know, off the side on the rocks. It's really interesting what comes up in these and then trying to figure out like, okay, well, why is my subconscious showing me this moment in that lifetime?
And, you know, that was really my intention in writing this book is that, you know, there is a lot of kind of stuff out there about like past lives and, you know, I was this in a past life, I was that in a past life. I really wanted to give people a way to kind of take those past lives home. Like, okay, you were this in a past life. Now what? What do I do with that, right? How do I take that Oregon Trail story and use it in my life today and use it to appreciate my relationship with my business partner or appreciate myself, right? So it really is about accepting the life that we're living right now today by way of context, looking at, you know, there's a bigger picture to our existence over many lifetimes. And there's an appreciation aspect. There's also a healing aspect to it as well. Like a lot of people are carrying thoughts or beliefs with them that can hold them back in some way. So once you remember that it was a past life, you're able to release it and let it go. And I've found that that is a really profound process for a lot of people. I've watched people step into better mental health, better physical health, better relationships, better just overall well-being by way of getting rid of things that were holding them back from their past lives. So sometimes even just knowing that it was a past life can be incredibly healing as well.
I remember watching an Oprah show when I was like, I don't know how old, maybe 11 or 12. And I always used to watch it with my mom. And there was this episode about children who can remember their past lives. Is this something that you come across a lot? I'm so intrigued and I keep trying to like get it out of my kids. All they kind of tell me is like they remember before they were in my belly, but they don't say like past lives. I think they just kind of have this weird memory of being like, they call it being in the stars, but they don't have memories of like past lives.
Yeah. You know, I found that it is really, really common. And again, we don't talk about it very openly in this culture. You know, if you go somewhere like, say, India, where belief in reincarnation is widely accepted, people will talk to their children in a different way, right? And children will actually, they feel open about it. We're more closeted, I think, in this culture. But when my children were about your children's age a million years ago, I remember I came home and I asked my daughter one time if she remembered before when she used to be big.
Oh.
And her answer shocked me. She came up with this really dark story and she was three. I was like, wow, you know, like I think she was like coloring. She loved Cinderella because Cinderella's dress was blue and that was her favorite color. And she just told me this whole story. It seemed like some plague and she made a medicine and no one believed her that the medicine wasn't killing people. And it sounded like some witch trial thing even too. And it was just like crazy. And I was like, where would she get that from? Like, I couldn't even think of like some movie that she would make that up with. And then my son on his own, maybe because he grew up in a home where I was talking about things like past lives more openly with them. One time I was cooking and he came in the kitchen. He must have been four. And he was like, Mom, he goes, I used to have a different mom and she had dark hair and I can't remember what her name is, but I really miss her. Is that okay? And I was like, oh, like he was feeling guilty about having feelings about a woman who was a mother figure that wasn't me. And I was like, that's okay. I go, maybe she'll be your wife someday or maybe you'll meet her down the road. And he was like, oh, okay. You know, so it is about how we're conditioned, right? And a lot of kids talk about things. Like I was a very psychic child and I used to talk about seeing things or feeling presences. And it's funny, my parents are very religious and don't believe in reincarnation. And my dad told me that he read the book and he was like, well, I couldn't tell if it was fiction or nonfiction. He was like, because you always like are good at making things up. And it's because when I was a psychic child, I would talk about like, this person's in the corner and they're wearing this or that or like whatever, right? So do we believe our children or do we it's up to each individual, but I want to encourage people to be open-minded, right? Like, why not, right? People For are sure. like, past lives. It's like, why not? How do you know, right? So.
And is there a place that's kind of like Danielle's kids said, in the stars, like an in-between space? Do you ever have people talk about that?
Yeah. And when you work with me, I usually do include a little bit of that between lives space as part of the session. There's always a part where I guide people through their death. I have them leave their body, which is usually an interesting experience for most people. Most people feel like a sensation change. They're kind of like, ooh, I feel lighter. And then I have them look at the body that they just left. And that's when I ask them what the lesson they learned from living that life was. And then sometimes people will go to a space that does seem to be, sometimes I hear people in the stars, some people feel like they're in a light, right? Some people specifically focus on a life between lives regression. My focus is primarily on the actual memories of being in physical form. But yeah, that part after you leave your body and you experience yourself as a consciousness separate from physical form, that in and of itself is just incredibly profound and can be life-changing on its own. Like, wow, I thought I was this body, right? Who I am transcends this lifetime. And I've had so many other bodies, right? In different forms and ways. So just being able to experience that and know that directly is a really super cool part of the process.
And how does that make you feel about death, like for your own death?
Yeah, there's a whole chapter in the book about rethinking death. You can actually lose the fear of death because you've had an experience with it. And I know a lot of people who've had kind of near-death experiences or even experienced clinical death and came back afterwards, they say that it's a beautiful experience. It's a transition. It's not scary. It's not painful. You know, you don't have to necessarily have a traumatic injury and experience of death in this life in order to get that same knowledge. You can actually experience your death in a past life and have that same kind of experience. It completely renegotiates the way that you think about death, that it's not the end. And I think that getting into this work really came for me through my own journey of grief, right? We all lose people. I lost my mother when I was a toddler. I wasn't even three, to cancer. And so that defined me, and that was part of like being a psychic child. But really trying to understand why bad things happen to good people, or why some people live to 100 and why babies die, that concept of justice and fairness to me was, it didn't seem to make sense. And it wasn't really until I understood what reincarnation was and how past lives work, that there's a bigger picture, right? We can open the curtains a little wider on that window and see our existence as not just this one life, but that we've had many, many lives. It's very deeply healing, particularly around the concept of death and grief and dying. Yeah, there's a really wonderful practical application for that.
I feel like the gut microbiome is something we talk about in every episode of the Sakara Life podcast. And I think people just still don't understand just how profound the gut microbiome is and how important it is to your overall health. It affects every system in your body, from your hormone health to your brain chemicals, your digestion, your metabolism, your sex drive. It really is the epicenter of our health. And yet people
are getting like half of the fiber, daily fiber they should be getting. I mean, when we set out to create Sakara, we anchored it on gut health because we both had such gut dysbiosis and imbalanced microbes. And we know the number one indicator of a healthy gut is having a diversity of microbes, but nobody really knows what that means or how to get it. Or I think it's really confusing to people. It's like, okay, I have all this bacteria in my gut. And what, I need to take care of them? It's hard to imagine how microbes in your gut can impact your cardiometabolic health or your mental health or your hormonal health or your fertility, all of these things. But
every time, like it's so entrenched in the literature at this point that every time you look at any disease, you can start to correlate changes in the microbiome. So if we can start with the gut and kind of like work backwards, that's still an amazing approach to overall health.
Probiotics are really important. We've been talking about probiotics for a long time, but I think more and more people are starting to talk about prebiotics. And it's something you and I talk about a lot, about fibers, plural. There's not just one type of fiber. There's multiple types of fibers. And they go in and they feed those microbes within our gut. That's what our microbes like to eat. If you want to be building up a healthy ecosystem of good microbes in your gut, they like to eat prebiotic fibers. They like to eat polyphenols, resistant starches. That's what they like to live on, and that's how they're going to proliferate in your gut.
Well, we are so excited to talk about our Saqqara fiber super powder, you guys, because it took us 3 years to make. And we really made it because if you think about what is one of the most important things you can get into your diet every single day, it really is fiber. I mean, 95% of Americans are not getting enough fiber every single day. We're in this fiber epidemic. And so we really wanted to create a fiber that would really help you hit that 35 to 50 grams of fiber, which, by the way, you guys, most people are getting under 15. You know, they say you should get 25, but when you study functional medicine, they say you should get 35 to 50 grams. And if you eat Saqqara breakfast, lunch, and dinner, you're getting 35 to 50 grams every day. And so in creating this product, we thought, how can we help people reach that number who can't eat our meals? If that's the number one determining factor of a healthy gut, how can we help people really build those healthy guts? So you get 6 grams of fiber from 10 sources of fruits and vegetable. We have prebiotic fiber in there as well as digestive enzymes. So it's not just fiber like your grandmother's fiber. It's fiber from 10 different sources plus these digestive enzymes and prebiotics that really help you stay regular, decrease bloat, help with satiety.
Ooh, we're making fiber sexy again.
It's about time.
You can find more details and enjoy 20% off your first order with code POD. That's code POD at checkout for 20% off your first order. Order now.
Can you talk to us a little bit about identity and like the things that bring us identity, at least as a human in form? And then what is the identity that kind of carries through? Is there one?
Yeah, so the book actually chips away at all the things that you're not in order to kind of help you get to what you ultimately are. And I actually based it from ancient yogic tradition. It's a meditation practice called Neti Neti. I don't know if you guys have heard of this, but it's kind of the whole what I am not, right? So each chapter goes through each of these false identities, like you are not your name, you are not your gender, you're not your sexuality, you are not your race or ethnicity. And then even into things like you're not your thoughts or beliefs, you're not your circumstances, you're not your suffering. And then the last part of the book goes into kind of what you are. So if you're none of these, then who it is that you are is that consciousness, that part of you that does survive death and moves on and reincarnates. Some people like to call it spirit or soul, higher self, authentic self. It doesn't matter what you call it. And that's our true identity. So you are a soul, not a body. And then that allows you to kind of look at yourself in a different way. Like, wow, I'm this ancient, wise, beautiful, eternal being, right? So who am I to have low self-esteem, right? Or, you know, how can I more fully embrace my body and my form? This is what I chose for myself. This is how it's serving me. Or understand why some people have significant life challenges. Some people struggle with illness, right? Disease that ultimately has a purpose, right? And I know you guys are both healers. You got into this work through your own journey of healing that you're able to see like, well, in past lives, I've been sick, I've been well, right? And that those are specific experiences to each lifetime in order to challenge you to learn, to grow, to step into who you're becoming. So it sounds kind of counterintuitive that I wrote a book about past lives that's actually about the future, but the future's not determined. The future is what we choose and who we want to become. So once you understand that all of these identities are false identities, you start to see, I'm a soul, not a body. You're able to kind of look at yourself in a different way, but also look at others in a different way, right? Any kind of hate or divisiveness or prejudice is based on a false identity. And I really wrote this book in the throes of the Black Lives Matter movement here in New York City and COVID and all of the political divisiveness. And I kept thinking to myself, like, if everybody could just see what I've seen, all of this hatred and violence and even like genocide and religious wars are based on false identities. That if everybody understood how reincarnation works and who they were in a past life, I believe that we would very easily create a society that featured more compassion, more understanding, more love, equality in a really more natural way. So that's really the message of the book. And who we decide to be, you know, is who we become. So once you actually discover your true identity, then you can decide who you want to step into and who you want to be in the future.
It's very John Lennon.
Yeah.
Imagine.
I love that.
And when you say your true identity, how do past lives kind of help you find that? I think about my past lives. I'm assuming it takes a lot more work than just like sitting on one session with you. But is it like you start to identify themes throughout your lives, or is it like lessons throughout your lives that you can kind of start to think of as an identity for your soul?
One of the things that I invite people to do in the book is to become friends with your past lives, right? And there's a lot of different exercises, journaling exercises, creative exercises, to kind of understand that your past lives are former versions of yourself and that your past life memories can be a part of your conscious working memory bank that you draw on today, right? So like, oh, remember that time that we were in Italy? Oh, was that last summer? No, in the 1600s, right? And that it becomes a part of like how you see yourself, which is cumulative of your existence. And you see yourself in different forms. The first past life I remembered myself, and I very strongly identify as a cisgender female in this life. But when I looked down at my feet, like you were saying, I could see that I was a man. And I could see that I was a really kind of gruff man too. And I could feel that I wasn't very intelligent. And I was kind of like, oh my gosh. Yet I could feel that it was really me. And it, you know, I'm somebody who kind of prides myself in being well-read. It just was a completely different persona than I identify with today. So it just took a sledgehammer to the mirror of and the lens by which I view myself. And I just kind of took a different compassionate look at different personality traits that different people have, different challenges. And there's a lot of important conversations, I think, that we're having today about identity, about the freedom to create your own identity, right? As well as the importance of history and understanding history, telling the truth about history, and understanding through that lens of history, how we got to be where we are, what's working, what's not working, and what we need to get rid of and change in order to become who we ultimately want to become in the future. So past lives is a really great tool to really explore all of that in a really personal way. It's not just history, it's your history, right? Your own personal soul's history. And you've lived in probably every continent on the globe and have had every skin color, ethnicity, background, religion, right? So it really opens your view in order to include your identity as beyond this life. And then it helps you, like I said, look at others as free to choose the identity that they want to be.
And in traditional, more Eastern religions like Buddhism, the idea of reincarnation and karma, it's like this idea that you're soul has to learn lessons and you're on the path to nirvana. And is that something that you find that souls kind of choose, as you said, their people or their life because they need to learn certain lessons, and do those lessons repeat themselves?
Definitely. Yeah, I do. I talk about this in the book. I liken life to like a school. And I don't use the term old soul because I don't believe that age guarantees wisdom. I think you can be old and ignorant. You know, the term I like to use is evolved soul, with the idea that we are here to learn and grow and become better beings. And I use better with air quotes, meaning more loving, more compassionate, right? More giving. And that includes more loving to ourselves, right? Self-love is an important part of that as well. So as far as the idea of nirvana, that I think that you're talking about the concept that some religious traditions have that eventually we can be liberated and be free of this reincarnational cycle, that we can just be done. I don't believe that's necessarily true, because I don't believe that Earth is the only place that we can reincarnate. I think that there's always more that we can learn and do and grow, and that maybe there's different realms or planets or places, who knows, right? There's so much out there that we don't really know or understand about consciousness and reality. But the point of reincarnating and the reason that we volunteered to be here, right, and signed up, is that we all wanted to challenge ourselves in order to learn and grow and experience love, experience life in a physical body. And it's not about transcending that lifetime. It's about living more fully and more purposefully in this life. And I think a lot of spiritual traditions talk about spiritual practices like trying to transcend your physical form. Well, no, you're living right now. You're in a body, right? And it's about having the ultimate, most purposeful, most meaningful, most joyful experience you can in a body, while also giving back and learning and sharing with others, all of these things. Yeah, life is a school. And, you know, looking back at you in the 1500s, it's a younger version of you, right? You wouldn't judge that you couldn't do the math that you can do now in kindergarten. It works kind of the same way. So I really see it as an ongoing process. And I don't think that it ever ends, because I'm a student of nature, cycles. And if there's an end point, there's usually a new beginning that comes with that ending. So that's my take on it.
Have you ever had anyone say they have past life memory of being something other than human?
Yeah,
like definitely. Animal or on mm-hmm. another planet or in another realm?
It doesn't come up super often. Usually when somebody remembers being an animal in a past life, it's usually somebody who's used to working with maybe animal medicine or animal spirits. People who have kind of studied shamanism in a certain way. That's been my experience with it. And the reason is because when you start to do past life work, there's a practical purpose for it. There's a takeaway for this life. So somebody that wouldn't know what it means, like I was an otter in a past life. Like, I don't know what that is, right? If that comes up, it's somebody who actually knows the spiritual meaning behind otter. And I don't know why I picked that random animal. But
I love to look it up, Michelle.
You love otters?
Yeah, my sister will send me videos of otters, and she just sent me one this morning, and it was so sweet. This mama with a little baby otter on top of her, and they were just like snuggling and cuddling and loving. And people's comments were like, this is the full embodiment of love. So maybe that's the spirit of otters.
Your spirit guides
are
funny.
Maybe nirvana is otter.
Maybe it is otter. I've never used otter before in my animal examples, but your spirit guides are like, say otter. Yeah, no, that's so beautiful. But see, so you're able to know, you were able, that is a really great example. So you were able to kind of be like, that otter embodies love. And so if you were to recall being an otter in a past life, you would be able to use that. Not everybody would be able to kind of draw on that in that certain way. What a great way to outline what I was saying. That's awesome.
So you just mentioned spirit guides. Talk to us about what your understanding of spirit guides are and maybe how we can all talk to our spirit guides.
Totally. And I do talk about this in the book. I mean, I believe that past life regression, past life experiences are receptive experience. It comes from spirit, right? So it's really your spirit guides who are facilitating this process. And the way that I define spirit guides is that sometimes they're ancestors, people who have passed, who are in spirit. Sometimes they're archetypes. I get people that are like, Jesus is my spirit guide, or Muhammad. It's like, okay, great. Or maybe specific people throughout history. Some people say like, I'm channeling Gandhi right now. he's probably working really hard on the other side, wherever he is, right? I do occasionally get people that will have spirit guide experiences with people who are living, that their consciousness is able to appear to them in spirit form. So there really is no limit. And they're the ones that are facilitating the past life experience. So you really want to kind of be open to receive the past life. It's not like you're like, oh, I'm trying to remember what happened in 1850, right? It's going to come to you. It's receptive. That's a really important part of that process because it is a spiritual process. It's an intuitive process and all human beings are intuitive. It's a matter of learning how it works for you, but it's also kind of inviting spirit to kind of show you your past lives, if that makes sense.
And then I remember you talked about different people experience their regression in different ways. So some people are highly visual and they can see everything, but also other people are more sensing, where maybe they're feeling the experience. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, totally. They're called the clairs, right? Like clairvoyant are people who can see things. And this is not just true in past lives. People that have dreams that are really visual, like a movie playing out. Or people who are clairvoyant, it's like, your phone rings and someone's face pops into your head and that's who's calling, right? Some people aren't clairvoyant. They're more what's called claircognizant or clairsentient, which claircognizant is clear knowing. Clairsentient is clear feeling. So you feel it or you know it. And that's associated with the gut, the solar plexus chakra, right? So some people are like, I just know it's 1700 or I know I'm in Barcelona or it's about 1600. That can be a little harder to trust because as human beings, I think that what we see is more real than what we feel, although they are equal senses, right? It's a matter of learning how it works for you. There's clairaudience. Some people will hear things. I occasionally will come across a client who'll say, well, they just told me the year is 1620. One or more voices narrated in their head that it's 1620. So again, that's their guides communicating with them. That's a little bit more of a mediumship thing. Some people will smell a smell, right? Something cooking. Smell and memory are very connected and smell can even be transporting, right? So it's a multi-sensory experience. A lot of people kind of get stuck on like, I want to see my past life. Over time, the people that feel it or know it though, are able to kind of know more details. They know what year it is. They know what happened to their family when they died, right? There's an omniscient quality to people that kind of have that kind of clairsentient, claircognizant thing. So if you can push past the mistrust and again, be like, okay, well, this is coming from my spirit guides. So I'm not going to be skeptical of my spirit guides. You can be skeptical of yourself. Don't be skeptical of your guides. It's a process. I really want to encourage people to see it as a process that there's always more to explore. And the book that I wrote isn't meant to be like just visit it once and read through it. It's meant to go back to again and again. It's an interactive guide through your past lives and into your best future with the idea that anytime we have a problem that we're looking to solve or somewhere we feel stuck, let's go back and let's see, is there a past life that's informing this? It's a practical tool. I think a lot of spiritual practices are more ethereal. This is a practical, tangible tool. Let me see if there's something in my unconscious mind from a past life that's holding me back, or if there's something I need to know or something I need to appreciate more. I try to give as many of those practical, tangible tools as possible in the book.
Do you walk people through how they can do a regression on their own?
Absolutely, yeah. There's a million and one different journaling prompts to kind of prime your unconscious mind to start thinking about your life in a different way and past lives. And then I developed an online course as a companion to the book, which is basically a virtual private session with me. And I am still doing private sessions at this point, but I want people to know you can do this at home. It's safe. You can actually go through the process. It's a 6 modules where I kind of talk about what to expect, what to focus on, how it works. There's an intention setting part, and then there's an actual whole past life regression I guide people through. And then there's a part afterwards where there's some journaling or trying to figure out how to create connections to your past life and this life. So I really want to give people as many ways as possible to really be able to connect with their past lives. And the book gives you some ideas, but if you really want to just like dive in and dig in, I created that online course for you to actually do a session at home as many times as you want. in this life.
Do people ever have visions or whatever sensations of future lives? Or is it all past life work?
Yes, that actually does happen. It's not super common. And I don't generally guide people to that experience on purpose. But sometimes it'll come up occasionally where it's, okay, wait, you just figured out that this past life is a pattern you've been repeating for thousands of years. Now you know that. Let's see the future now that you just created based on that new understanding and that new healing, right? The future's not determined. We're constantly creating it with our choices. So sometimes people need to actually see that or know that, like, wow, this past life work you did just changed your future. And here's what you can expect, a possible future or a probable future based on that new understanding. So yeah, people can actually do that through meditation work. And there's a whole chapter in the book that is about that future work. Because to me, your past lives are only interesting as far as they're informing the life you're living right now and holding you back from the future that represents your highest potential.
Beautiful. Well, we like to end the session with a question around light work. And light work is really homework for our listeners to kind of put into practice something that you talked about today. So whatever kind of intuitively comes to mind for you on what people can do.
What just came to mind is that I would really love everybody to look around your environment, look around your home, think about the kind of movies you like, the music you like, the food you like, places that you like to travel, and really make a list that I want to call your past life clues. And they're question marks. They don't necessarily mean that you definitely lived a past life there, but it's like, go and look at little tchotchkes you have in your home and different things you're kind of drawn to in order to start to get your mind trained in a certain way, like maybe there's a past life reason behind it. I found that that exercise in itself is really, really powerful because it primes your unconscious to kind of show you more. And it can be really magical what you can discover through that process.
I love that. Well, thank you so much, Michelle. It was so lovely to get to connect with you again. And congratulations on your book.
Thank you so much.
Great to connect again in this life. Because I'm sure we've seen you before.
And let's do it again soon. Thank you so much for having me on and for your thoughtful questions and being willing to share about your experiences as well. I really appreciate that.